from bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Ollie Barrett. Welcome to Monday's Richie Allen Show, January 6th, 2020. Lovely to be with you. It's a miserable day here in Salford and Greater Manchester. Well, it's all the better now that you're here. Thanks for joining me. Let's do the first radio show of 2020. Two terrific guests, of course, will be talking about Iran. And Iran, but also one or two things besides that as well. We won't just dwell on Iran. It's brilliant to be back.
Richie Allen.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of the Treasury Paul Craig Roberts is back on the radio program today to talk about the escalation in the Gulf, the escalation of tension. I mean, that's what they're saying in the media between the United States and Iran. Very serious. Paul Craig Roberts said this hour, don't miss him. Later on in the program, returning to the program for his second visit, Jason Burmes joins me. YouTube.com/InfoWarrior. That's Jason's channel, InfoWarrior. He has produced a number of brilliant documentary films over the years, including the groundbreaking Loose Change. We'll talk about Jeffrey Epstein. We'll talk about September the 11th and the Israel connection. And we'll do that not to be unkind to the state of Israel, but because it's been in the news of late. Jason Burmes joins the program in the second hour. As usual, if you'd like to comment on anything, do so through Twitter. I look forward, as I always do, to reading your comments. Yes, good job, eh? Good job. Right, let's jump straight into it then, because there's so much to get through today. Lots of other news and brief as well, by the way. It's not brief news, but you might, if you're in Manchester or Salford, you'll know about a guy called Reinhard Sinaga. Well, you'll know about him since this afternoon. He's been convicted of 159 sex offences, including 136 rapes against young men. This sicko was found guilty of luring men from outside Manchester nightclubs, men who were paralysed, drunk. And when he got him into his flat, he drugged them and raped them and filmed the attacks. This kid, he's gone to jail where he'll serve at least 30 years. That's a big story. Harvey Weinstein's, or Weinstein, or Weinstein, if you're Jeremy Corbyn. Harvey Weinstein, his trial has begun, but it's the preliminary stuff like jury selection going on today. I'm sure Jason Burmes will have something to say about that a little bit later on. Ricky Gervais is trending. Is Ricky Gervais, of course, the writer and actor, The Office, talked about this morning, hosting the Golden Globes. Well, he hosted the Golden Globes last night for the fifth time. And as usual, his monologue was funny. And as usual, his monologue was controversial. Here's the Epstein, as in Jeffrey Epstein, and Prince Andrew gags in amongst this little montage. Ricky Gervais.
Talking of all you perverts, it was a big year. It was a big year for paedophile movies. Surviving R. Kelly, Leaving Neverland, Two Popes. Shut up. Shut up. I don't care. I don't care. This show should just be me coming out going, well done, Netflix, you win everything. Good night. But no, we got to drag it out for 3 hours. You could binge watch the entire first season of Afterlife instead of watching this show. That's a show about a man who wants to kill himself because his wife dies of cancer. And it's still more fun than this, okay? Spoiler alert, season two is on the way. So in the end, he obviously didn't kill himself. Just like Jeffrey Epstein. Shut up. I know he's your friend, but I don't care. You had to make your own way here in your own plane, didn't you? Right. The Irishman was amazing. It was amazing. Look. It was. It was great. Long, but amazing. It wasn't the only epic movie. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, nearly 3 hours long, Leonardo DiCaprio attended the premiere, and by the end, his date was too old for him. So... Even Prince Andrew's like, come on, Leo, mate, you know. You're nearly 50, son.
You're nearly 50, son. He also made gags about Greta Thunberg and wokeness among Hollywood's liberal elite. It was all right as far as Gervais monologues went. So the murder of Iranian General Qasem Soleimani, the biggest story of the day, and no doubt will dominate the news media for the next week or so. Not a single dissenting voice in the UK media. Not one voice, not one person saying, well, hang on a second, Soleimani was only protecting Iran's interest in the region. No, not at all. Not a single dissenting voice. The UK media has now transformed utterly into the mirror of the US media. It's taken a few years, but it has arrived. It's landed. The UK media now is the US media. You've just got commentators now. You've got no journalism. You've got no journalists. No. No journalists. No journalistas. No journalists. No reporters. You have commentators. Case in point. ITV's breakfast guy, Piers Morgan, former editor of the Daily Mirror. Morgan has turned ITV into Fox News. Well, at least the morning show into Fox News anyway. Great example, this, of something I've been talking about for some time. Binary choice tactic. Binary choice tactic. Morgan, Piers Morgan, comes off sounding like Bill O'Reilly here. While he's interviewing this morning, the man known as Ed Davey, Liberal Democrat MP, of course, Ed Davey. You will hear Piers Morgan first. Listen up.
Soleimani was the leader of the Quds, the Revolutionary Guard Special Forces, who have been terrorising the Middle East for decades under his leadership. No one seems to be mourning his departure, apart from a few people in Iran. Are you glad he's dead? Are you glad he's been removed from committing these acts of terror, as many people see it?
Yeah. Fantastic. Are you glad he's dead? Are you glad? Right? Right. Binary choice. There's only one answer to that.
With respect, I don't think whether Soleimani...
Now, Davey tries to answer it to his credit and says, well, it's not a simple matter of whether I'm glad he's dead or not. Listen.
With respect, I don't think whether Soleimani is alive or dead is the real issue. The issue, of course, is Iran is a dangerous regime. Mm. The question is, how do you manage that? And has this assassination helped in managing Iran?
But are you pleased he's gone?
No, not pleased at all.
Really? You'd like him to still be around committing acts of terror?
Yeah. Like Bill O'Reilly before him and Sean Hannity, Piers Morgan interrupts, seeks to confuse and to dilute what Ed Davey is about to say. Davey is saying, well, all right, so Iran is a hostile regime. It isn't. But that doesn't matter. Ed Davey thinks it is. But he's about to say, well, you know, assassinating one of their generals while he's in Baghdad on the, you know, while he's a guest of his next door neighbour and a US ally might be inflaming things. So maybe it's not the best thing. But Piers Morgan jumps in with the binary choice.
I'd like him to still be around committing acts of terror.
I mean, it doesn't get any more stupid than that.
I'd like him to still be around committing acts of terror.
Gets worse when Davey explains why he thinks as he does.
Before this assassination, the Iranian people were worried about their government. Mm. We saw protests against the government because of the economic hardships. Mm. And the hardliners were in problems, the moderates still were powerful. What's happened now with the assassination of General Soleimani is the hardliners are now actually in control.
I get it.
They've united Iran.
But just to clarify.
It's dangerous for America. I get it. It's dangerous for the West. It's dangerous for Britain.
Okay, but he was...
It's disgusting what Piers Morgan is doing there. And this is what I mean when I say that the UK media has now come to be where the US media was about 15 years ago. Watch the Russell Crowe docudrama about Fox News, about Roger Ailes. Watch it. This is where you are now. Ed Davey is wrong. Iran isn't a dangerous regime, man. It's not a dangerous regime, man. It isn't. He's wrong, but he's trying to explain that even though I think it's dangerous, we shouldn't be doing this. The moderates were winning out in Iran, he's saying, and maybe killing this guy has just given all the fuel and all the ammunition in the world to the hardliners. But Piers Morgan can't allow him to be rational.
The hardliners were in problems. The moderates still were powerful. What's happened now with the assassination of General Soleimani is the hardliners are now actually in control.
I get it.
They've united Iran.
But just to clarify,
it's dangerous.
Shut up and let him finish.
Dangerous for America.
I get it.
It's dangerous for the West. It's dangerous for Britain.
Okay, but he was also very dangerous for all those things. Soleimani actively sought to kill British forces.
No, he didn't. Never. Soleimani has never plotted to kill British forces, nor has Soleimani ever taken any action to attack or to kill British soldiers. That is a whopper of a lie by Piers Morgan. It's never happened. That's a lie. It's an absolute lie. You can debate me all day long about what I think about Iran and Iran's place in the politics of the region, but Soleimani has not attacked nor planned to attack British soldiers or British personnel. It's a lie by Morgan.
American forces. He was terrorising through proxy groups.
No, he wasn't. What he was doing, and I explained this on Sunday View yesterday, and he's been doing it for decades now, is helping people in countries like Syria defend themselves against lunatic Wahhabists, which were sent there by the United States, by Saudi Arabia, and by Israel. That's all he was doing. He wasn't attacking anybody. He was helping others to defend their sovereign territory.
All around the Middle East, from Yemen to Syria to Iraq to Lebanon. I mean, this is a very bad guy running a very bad...
Take Trump's cock out of your mouth, Morgan, eh? Hey,
hey. Bad series of proxy terror groups around the Middle East.
I'm not going to defend General Soleimani.
No, but I asked, were you pleased he was gone? And you said you weren't.
Binary choice. I asked you, were you pleased that he's gone? And you said that you weren't. And he gave a good reason for it. He said, if the Iranians, you know, were coming to the table and were talking about deals that would involve them not developing a nuclear weapon in return for the dropping of sanctions, and more moderate voices were being heard, the last thing in the world we needed to do was assassinate General Soleimani. That's exactly what he was saying. But Bill O'Reilly, Piers Morgan, Sean Hannity, they're all the same. Do you understand? 15 minutes past the hour. Had a laugh today, the BBC afternoon anchor, Simon McCoy. He had an Iranian academic on the programme. Interestingly enough, the same Iranian academic did agree last year to come on this programme, but then decided not to at the 11th hour. His name is Mohammad Mirandi, and he works at Tehran University in Iran, in Tehran. And McCoy had, this is the BBC presenter, had a chat with this Iranian academic for about 3 minutes. To be fair to Simon McCoy, he was fair. And they had a chat about what happened. And then Simon McCoy says to the Iranian academic, what about the reaction of US allies? Is Iran disappointed that United States allies haven't been more condemning of the action, the murder of General Soleimani? And what happens next is Mohammad Mirandi, the Tehran academic, in 90 seconds sums up the last 10 years. This is excellent stuff.
The Iranians have looked at what the Europeans have done over the last few years. They aided the United States in destroying Libya. They worked alongside the Americans and the Saudis in funding and destroying Yemen and helping the Saudis impose a starvation siege. We saw how the Europeans and the Americans facilitated the influx of tens of thousands of foreign fighters in Syria, extremists, Wahhabi extremists, pretending they're freedom fighters. And when the Iranians see these sort of things, and when the Iranians see that the Europeans who've signed the nuclear deal are basically obeying Trump and are in complete violation of the deal, the conclusion that we get in Iran is that the Europeans are, with all due respect, they are just as immoral as the United States and just as unreliable. And therefore, many people are saying here that why should we even talk with the Europeans? The Europeans will just do what Trump says. And so far, that's what we've been seeing. So now, even now, the United States has carried out an act of war. Trump has said he will potentially target Iranian cultural sites. That's a war crime, but no European leader will say anything. A few months ago, Trump said he may obliterate Iran. No European leader said anything. So when you have this sort of reaction coming from Europe, then Iranians conclude that the Europeans are just as much a part of the problem as Trump. Whether that is completely true or not is one issue, but public perception is important.
It's very
brilliant. Absolutely terrific summing up of the last 10 years by the Iranian academic Mohammad Mirandi. What does Mackay say?
Is important.
Very briefly, lots of concern.
Very briefly. Let's get you off the air as quick as we can.
The so-called unintended consequences of what the United States...
Yeah, Mackay goes on to ask him, does he think there'll be a big war? And Mirandi says, no, he doesn't. Is about the gist of it there. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show, the BBG, not the BBC, broadcasting live from Salford in Greater Manchester this Monday, January the 6th, 2020. Identity politics, gender identity, self-identification, men and women, wrong bodies, blah, blah, blah. But it's important because, as I said this morning and as I said yesterday on Sunday View, it's going to be a big thing this year. The singular pronoun they, what a load of bollocks that is, has been voted word of the decade by linguists in America, who said it embodied 2010 to 2020. The term is used as a gender-neutral pronoun by many so-called non-binary people. Fuckwits. The American Dialect Society said the word is a vital indicator of social trends. That's hate speech, Richie. You can't say that. I can. If you think that you're non-binary, you are a fuckwit. Don't bring me and my friends and neighbours into your madness. All right? And insist that we make obeisance to you and that we accept that it is normal and perfectly fine, because it isn't. We're happy for you to be whatever you want. Just leave us alone. Leave us out of it. So anyway, they, them, nonsense, right? So Sky had a debate about this. They love their debates. And they always get Brendan O'Neill on from Spiked Online. He's their gammon of choice. Not that there's anything wrong with being a gammon now, mind you. Now, debating O'Neill was a performer, which is a vague title, isn't it? What is a performer, exactly? A performer called Amru Al-Qadi. Amru is a trans person or something. Might be non-binary, I have no idea. But for the sake of conserving time, I'll refer to Amru as him. Now, he wasn't happy at having to debate Brendan on the use of pronouns. Oh, no.
Actually, the they pronoun has been used as a singular pronoun. Even Shakespeare used to use it. It's always been there. It's just, I think, society's become reacquainted with it as a thing. But to be honest, I slightly resent having to come on a TV show to sort of debate my right to use the they pronoun, because I don't think trans lives are really up for debate. What I would like to ask Brendan is this. For a journalist who edits a magazine that is literally an advocate for free speech, why is it you throw tantrums like an insecure child at the idea of people like me using they pronouns? I read your really, really shameful piece on Sam Smith. I mean, shouldn't everyone be allowed to identify however they like? Who are you to police what other people's pronouns are, when the whole mission of Spiked, as far as I understand it, is to advocate for a society that's full of free speech and a diversity of belief systems and ideas?
Yeah, Brendan, if you want free speech for everybody, why can't these people have their effing pronouns?
Well, you know, it's precisely because Spiked believes in freedom of speech and I believe in freedom of speech that we are worried about some of the excesses of the transgender movement. This is a movement that threatens physical violence against feminists if they say that a man cannot become a woman. This is a movement that has shut down meetings of feminists. This is a movement which has shouted down feminists and one elderly woman who gathered in Hyde Park to express their concerns about the Gender Identity Act. This is a movement that is deeply, deeply censorious. And my issue with the use of the word they to describe an individual, it's correct that it is a quirk of the English language that you can use the word they to refer to an individual if you don't know that person's sex.
But things have changed.
Sex. But most of the time, they means plural.
Indeed.
And that's how most people understand it. And I'm very worried about the creation of this elitist new language with words like they, non-binary, cisgender, heteronormative, the kind of words that ordinary people do not use. But they are used by a new elite to signal that they are good people, to signal that they are part of the in club.
Yes, I hereby give you permission. The next time somebody says cisgender in your presence, you can break their little finger. Just their little finger, their pinky on their right hand. Let's get rid of this nonsense cisgender. Let's just get rid of that.
Club. And anyone who refuses to use them or who fails to use them is shut out and demonised and written off as transphobic.
Well, they're not just written off as transphobic. They're often fired from their jobs. Now, what does Amru Khalid say to that? Or Qadi? Yeah, it's Amru Qadi.
You talk about demonisation, but I think what we have seen in society over the past few years is the demonization of trans people, okay? Ever since this sort of constant debate around transgender lives that has been happening in the British media for the past few years, there has been an 81% spike in trans hate crimes alone last year. 2 in every 5 trans people have been attacked on a bus. I was attacked on a bus. I think that people being demonized are actually the minority here and some of the most vulnerable in society. And I think we all try and pretend that this is some sort of debate which has a pro and a con side, but these are people's lives. Well, I don't think, can I come in? Trans people aren't a movement, as you say. They're not an ideology. They're not a belief system. Trans people are merely people trying to live their lives who don't, for whatever reason, fit into the binary. Some of them do fit into binaries, but don't fit into traditional kind of gender in the way that people would understand it. And I think instead of trying to debate them away, what we might be able to do instead is understand that there are different ways of being and become tolerant. I think what you're basically refusing to allow is basic respect for trans people. And you can dress it up as Orwellian language or whatever kind of, you know, where you want to kind of package what is essentially intolerance. But that's all it is, Brendan.
Well, I would make I've always made a distinction between trans people and the trans movement. I know trans people. Trans people fit into society very well, and most of them are just interested in getting on with their lives as best they can. The trans movement, on the other hand, the kind of self-selected spokespeople for trans people, has become a deeply intolerant movement. I think it's very ironic that you would accuse others of intolerance when we live in a world in which anybody who questions gender self-identification, particularly a woman, as we saw with the for starter case, where she effectively lost work because she questioned the cult of transgenderism. There is an intolerant clampdown on anyone who questions the way in which language is changing, and anyone who questions the right of people who were born as men to go into women's spaces. There is an absolute censorious, intolerant clampdown on those people, and this is what concerns some of us.
It's what concerns many of us. The idea that if you don't believe that a man can be a woman, as I don't, right? And I've said this a million times. I have great sympathy with people whom I've spoken on this programme. Not sympathy, empathy, I suppose, is a better word. The concern here is that if you don't accept that and almost sign up to it, it can have profound consequences for you in terms of your employment and your prospects. These are dangerous times. 26 minutes past, 25 and a half minutes even past the hour. Getting ahead of myself there. Let's welcome an old friend to the programme. Let's get him on. This is very important, this. Huge crowds have packed the streets again today in Tehran, ahead of the funeral of the Iranian military commander Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated last Friday, allegedly on the orders of US President Donald Trump. And we've spoken a lot earlier today and on Sunday View yesterday about the implications of that assassination. Let's welcome back to the programme an old friend of ours. He is the former US Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. He's a brilliant author and writer, and you can read him at his website, paulcraigroberts.org. And he's written a very, very interesting piece, which has gone into the Russian press today, unsurprisingly. A piece entitled Putin's Hour is at Hand, in which he makes a very interesting argument about what the Russian government could, what Vladimir Putin as Russian president could do, and what could be to the not only the advantage of the Russian state, but also everybody else. It's fascinating. We'll talk about that with him in a second. First of all, let's welcome him back to the programme. Paul, first of all, Happy New Year to you, my friend. Welcome back.
Thank you very much, Richie.
Lovely to
hope we have a better new year than we had last year.
So do I, my friend. Thanks for coming on. You're in demand today, I know that. Listen, before we talk about your article and the Russian response, which I suppose will be measured, at least in the short term, to what happened to Qasem Soleimani last Friday, a good friend of yours and a regular guest on this programme, Gerald Celente, believes that what we saw on Friday is basically the beginning of what will become the Third World War. Now, judging by the tone of your article on paulcraigroberts.org, you might be a bit more optimistic than your old friend Gerald. What do you think?
Yes, I think it's unlikely that it will develop into Third World War. Putin would have to really flub his opportunity for that to happen. And I don't think he's incompetent. So I think this is a bit, I mean, what Trump did was extremely reckless and irresponsible, and the consequences could be as serious as Third World War, but it's in Putin's hands, and he can now replace the United States as the world leader and block any further developments. So that's what my article is about.
That's right. It's an I posted this yesterday. It went viral yesterday on Twitter. It was posted and reposted. If you haven't read it, folks, go to paulcraigroberts.org. How could he do this? You argue, and I agree with you, that what we're seeing in terms of the assassination of Qasem Soleimani, and I talked at great length on my newspaper review show yesterday about what it was that he was doing in the region. He was basically protecting Iran's interests. He was, I suppose, he was reacting, wasn't he, Soleimani, to the Israeli and US and British so-called freedom fighters that weren't actually freedom fighters, that were destabilizing jihadists. That's what Soleimani was doing. The US took him out on Friday. But you reckon that this is all about, ultimately all roads lead to Moscow, and that these events are not so much about Iran and, you know, trying to rattle the cage of Iran, Paul, but you believe that it's ultimately about Russia, all of this?
Yes, ultimately. I have a, from my information, I think the situation, if the information is correct, is somewhat different from you just, the way you just described it. The Iranian leader was in Iraq to discuss with the Iraqi prime minister a Saudi Arabian proposal to reduce the tensions in the Middle East. And he was on a diplomatic mission and was not there for any of the purposes that Trump or the neocons or the Pentagon claims.
Yeah.
He was, and this is the reason he did it openly, because he was on a diplomatic mission. Now, for a country, especially one that claims to be a first world democracy, to assassinate a high official of a foreign government in a different country on a diplomatic mission, I think this is probably unprecedented. And this is it's an absurdity. And I'm sure Israel is behind it. I'm absolutely certain that, that Trump did this for Israel. We've talked about it before.
Yeah.
Iran is in Israel's way because Israel wants to occupy southern Lebanon. And they've tried twice, but Hezbollah, the militia, defeated the Israeli army and drove them out. So Hezbollah gets its support from Syria and Iran. And of course, if Iran goes, so will Syria and Hezbollah. And so the whole region is opened up for Israel and for Israeli expansion. And that's the reason Trump did this. But you are correct that the overall American thrust at Iran is a thrust at Russia. Because if Iran gets into the kind of chaos that Libya's in, that Iraq is in, that the United States tried to get Syria in, then the jihadists start infiltrating into the Russian Federation, because, you know, many of the Russian provinces have large Islamic elements. And
that's so right.
It's a way of destabilizing Russia and a way for the neoconservatives to recover the American position as the sole unipower, by causing Russia so much internal troubles that they cease to function on the world stage. So that's the overall aim of it. And so that is the reason Putin cannot allow Iran to fall into chaos, because it means a chaos will soon be in Russia.
It'll spread to Russia. By the way, I agree with you earlier. I didn't make myself clear, which is often my it's my downfall sometimes. You're right. He was in Baghdad to talk peace and to talk, about positive ways forward. The point I was making about Soleimani is, over the years, on the UK media today, Paul, he's being portrayed as some sort of a lunatic terrorist who wanted to attack UK and US troops. But the fact is, you mentioned Hezbollah. He was very much involved in the setting up of Hezbollah. He cut his teeth in the Iran-Iraq war when Donald Rumsfeld gave all of that weaponry to Iraq to go and use in Iran. This guy, as far as I can tell, over the last 10 years or so, has been trying to prevent the head-chopping lunatics destroying Syria. I think this guy, as far as they go, is a pretty decent guy, this guy, Soleimani. I wanted to, just before we talk about what you think Putin should do in terms of making a public declaration about Iran and Russia's solidarity with Iran, which I think is really interesting in your article, what's your response to Baghdad saying, well, to the Iraqi parliament voting to tell the United States to clear out and to take all of its troops out of the country? What's the response to that likely to be, Paul, in terms of the US response?
Well, Trump has said that if he does that, then Iraq will have to pay billions of dollars to the Americans in order to pay for the bases that the United States has established in Iran. So Iraq may not have the billions of dollars, but I suspect what will happen is that the Americans will simply buy off the Iraqi leadership. The parliament can pass this, but, you know, the prime minister or the president or whatever the title of the chief executive is, he and his advisors can easily be offered hundreds of millions of dollars not to do that. And if the Americans leave, it means that the Iraqis gain control over their own oil instead of having it in American hands. So it's not expensive, in other words, for Washington to buy off the Iraqi leadership. Now, they may not be able to do it because the outrage is so high about the murder of the Iranian that the Americans may not be able to purchase the government. So that, you know, that remains to be seen. What's curious to me is why has the Iraqi government allowed the Americans to be there anyhow? I mean, it was the Americans who destroyed their country, murdered, maimed, dislocated, orphaned, widowed, millions of Iraqis, destroyed the infrastructure, destroyed the museums, all the historic sites, wiped out the middle class. I mean, why, you know, you would think that every Iraqi would be determined to kill every American he saw on the spot. So the fact that there are any Americans there shows how corrupt the Iraqi government is. They obviously are paid to let the Americans be there. And so whether or not this outrage by murdering a top official of a government or a diplomatic mission in Iraq, I mean, this is essentially a war crime against Iraq as well as Iran. So I don't know why they allow Americans to be there anyhow. So it shows that there's a great weakness in the Muslim world that I think it comes back to the split between the Shia and the Sunni. So that kind of just makes them weak, and there's always somebody willing to sell them out.
They're too busy fighting with themselves to unite against.
Trust, yeah. They don't trust one another. Yeah. They're fighting with themselves. But also, you know, if somebody comes around handing out millions and millions of dollars or even billions, that's worth more to them than their country. And so that's kind of the problem. That's the reason this very large population has been impotent at the hands of the West for a century, since World War I. You know, the Turks were gone, but then the British and the French took over, and now the Americans. So it's very strange that
that the British and the French could occupy the Middle East, and now that the Americans, this is a very strange thing. And it shows an inherent weakness in the Arab world. So we don't know whether that will allow the Americans to stay. I kind of suspect the Americans don't want to stay, because I think now they are going to be targets. The Iranians have a lot of proxies, and even without those proxies, people are outraged. You can see it in the protests in Iraq. You can see it in the support for the murdered Iranian in Iran. People are outraged. So I think this is going to make it very difficult to be an American there. And what really shows you that is that Trump's explanation for killing this man was to make our people safe in the Middle East. And the very next thing he said, the very next thing that the government said here was, all Americans out. You're in danger. Get out.
That's right. Just after they did it.
That obviously didn't make them safe.
Yeah. And of course, any fool could have predicted that. PaulCraigRoberts.org is Paul's website. Check out the articles on there. Before we talk about the possibility, as mooted as suggested by Paul in his really excellent piece, you know, a kind of a treaty between Iran and China and Russia and even Turkey. Before we get to that, it could be argued, I'm not making the argument, I mean, I did make it yesterday, but what do I know? It could be argued that because of what you just said there, the US didn't have a direct gain from assassinating General Soleimani, but Israel did. And it's the old detective shows that we watched over the years, Columbo, all the great shows. You look for the person or persons who might benefit the most. And as far as I can tell, Israel is the only benefactor, really, from the murder of this general. Was Trump ordered to or requested to carry out the assassination by the Israeli government? I know we don't know for a fact, but do we suspect that?
Well, I'm completely confident that Israel was behind it. I don't think they would order him.
Yeah.
But they would certainly present it to him as an opportunity he has to build his patriotic base in the United States by showing that he's tough and he's gotten rid of another terrorist. And, you know, the American people are very propagandized. You know, they think the Iranians are out to get them, just like they think the Russians are out to get them. And so if he kills an Iranian leader that the media will demonize, then it makes him look like he's standing up for America, because, you know, the American conservatives, they're as dumb as everybody else. And they are wrapped in the flag, and they can't see through all the propaganda, and they don't want to. America's the best, you know, and, oh, we got to get these guys and all that kind of stuff. So that's probably the way it worked out. Actually, the information I have, which I can't guarantee is correct, is that the proposal to take him out was put on a list of options handed to him by the Pentagon or by his National Security Council. And the people now who put that list forward say, oh, they're shocked. They didn't mean for him to do that. It was just like a throwaway to make the other suggestions look reasonable.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether that's them covering up for themselves or whether that's the way they cover up for Israel. But I'm sure this originated in Israel. There's no doubt whatsoever about it. And I'm fairly confident that the reason Trump did it was that it makes him look like he's standing up for America against his base, you know, for his base, who are, you know, keep wanting somebody to stand up to somebody, you know,
yeah.
After Russiagate, Impeachgate, you know, they really want the president to arrest all those people and throw them in the jail.
Well, you've just answered my next question, Paul. To be fair to you, that's good stuff, because I was going to say his base should be wringing their hands in despair, because when he campaigned back in 2015 and 2016, one of his great promises, of course, was that he would end interventionism. and that he would stop trying to be the world's police officer. No more troops overseas. And but you've just explained why his base isn't so concerned with that great flip-flop. You've explained it very well. Because of the fake allegations about Russian interference, that's changed. Yeah, I get that. I totally get that now.
Yeah, what a mess. Yeah, that's right, Richie. Yeah. But in fact, he may have ended American presence in the Middle East because we may now be driven out. In other words, I mean, you could almost say, well, he was in a box. He couldn't do anything. So he did something that would cause us to be forced out.
Yeah.
But that's not why he did it. I think he did it because of the reasons I gave you. But the consequences could well be the end of the American presence in the Middle East because we were already hated. But now there's a cause. You see, this Iranian that was killed was actually a hero for all Arabs and Muslims. And he's the principal one responsible for the defeat of ISIS. He's the one who's been organizing and leading the defeat of the jihadists.
That we're supposed to be against. That we're supposed to be fighting, of course.
But we financed them and created them.
That's right. That's right.
And sent them, we used them first against Gaddafi in Libya, and then we sent them to Syria. And they would have won in Syria too, but the Russians stepped in. And then the Iranians organized the various groups like Hezbollah. You know, we call the Iranians terrorists and we call Hezbollah terrorists, but these are the people who essentially defeated ISIS. Of course, the Russian Air Force was critical, but these were the guys on the ground. And it was the alliances that the Iranian general, who actually essentially was the second most powerful leader in Iran, and had a following throughout the Muslim world. So the guy is really a hero. And in fact, he is a very unusual person because there's hardly ever in history a person of this type of leadership skills.
And
he's a very rare person, and it's a huge blow for Iran. And I'm sure that everyone is very angry. So the consequences for the United States will be severe.
Yeah, you make a good point about Soleimani. He was mooted as a possible future Iranian president. Paul Craig Roberts is live on the line today talking about this very serious issue we're discussing today, the response to the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani. Paul, in your article, I read your article twice. It's very good. But there was a real moment of pause in there for me. You suggest that Putin could announce that Iran is now going to be looked after by Russia. It's going to be protected by Russia. And that it could be formalised, that protection, in a defence treaty between Russia, China and Iran, with maybe India and Turkey. And I look at that and I think, yeah, I can understand why a man of your experience, and I wouldn't dream of patronising you at all. I understand why you would say that. You've got far more knowledge of these things than I do. But at the same time, that could really be seen as a real threat, couldn't it, to the likes of France and Israel and the US. If they were to stand, and I can understand, and you know, a part of me thinks, yeah, it's a good idea. Let's stand around Iran and tell the military-industrial complex and Israel and America, you're not going to destroy this country, we're going to stop you. That could also be like a red rag to a bull, Paul. And that would be my only concern, that could escalate it even further. Convince me that you're right there, because I want to believe you're right.
I think it's easy to do. Here's the situation now. Trump probably by now knows that he made a serious mistake. It's clear that it will be made clear to him by the Russians that they're not going to permit chaos in Iran. So they really don't have to publicly say that because Trump already knows it. In fact, the latest information I have from Russia is that their defense minister, Shoigu, has already spoken with the chief of the general staff of the Iranian armed forces and with the chief of intelligence in Turkey, and they're organizing to be sure nothing else happens. Well, the danger, here's the danger. The danger is Israel, because they've got the thing now going where they want it. So if Trump starts pulling back and the thing starts looking like it's over with, at least for now, the Israelis are perfectly capable of pulling off a false flag attack. They can kill some American soldiers or unleash missiles on American base, sink an American warship, and blame Iran. The American media will write whatever Israel says. Nobody's going to investigate it. And so the minute it happens, the media will already have the story, Iran kills Americans, Iran attacks American base, Iran sinks American ship, and nobody will ever dare say anything about Israel. And so then that forces Trump. He's back now. He's got to stand up for America. He's already blustered all the things he's going to do to Iran. If they do anything, well, now they've done something. He has to go forward with it. So that's the danger. The danger is right there. And so what does the alliance do? First of all, it's defensive. Nothing is going to be said about, we are forming a military alliance against the United States or Israel. They're saying we are forming a defensive alliance. And once you say that, it becomes impossible to attack Iran. Because if you attack Iran, you're attacking Russia and China, and not even the craziest, idiotic American neoconservatives or the criminally insane Netanyahu would want to do that, because it would be the end of them. I mean, Israel's a tiny little place. One little bitty Russian nuke is all it takes, and Israel's gone forever off the face of the earth. And the United States has no capability of winning any kind of an encounter with Russia, much less Russia and China, and they know it. And so the purpose of the alliance, of the announced alliance, is to tell Israel there's no point in you trying anything because it's not going anywhere. So in not taking that step, Israel still has the opportunity. They can say, okay, let's pull off something. We'll blame the Iranians. I mean, this is routine, isn't it? We've been watching this for years.
Years, yeah.
Decades. It's routine. And we know how arrogant they are. They always get away with it. They've got Trump completely in the box. And that's all they got to do, and that lights the fuse. So that's the reason that I made this proposal. I also made the proposal because once Putin does that, he now holds all the cards, and he can step in and say, okay, now I'm going to mediate this. Well, he's the only one with the credibility and objectivity to be trusted to mediate it. We know the Americans can't be trusted, or the Israelis. And so do the Iranians. So the Iranians are not going to negotiate with us or Israel. But this would let Putin then take over world leadership, which we need to happen. I mean, look, there's no leadership in the United States. Look at what goes on. I mean, it's insane. We have the president assassinate a high-ranking guy on a diplomatic mission. This is absurd. I think that's unique in history. Look at Britain. I mean, wait, you don't have any leadership. You ain't leadership in decades.
Dreadful here. I mean, you mentioned...
Look, anywhere in Europe, there's no leadership. There's none. There's zero. There are a bunch of nothings. You could walk through them easier than you can walk through a wet paper bag. So, but Putin is a real person, and so this would let him settle the issue. We, the United States, would be on the outside and wouldn't have anything to say about it. And once the issue is settled and you have that type of a defensive alliance, it also stops American and Israeli aggression everywhere else. See, the reason the American aggression continues is there's no defense alliance against it. Putin was convinced by the historians that alliances lead to war. This is bullshit. Sometimes they may, but what leads to war is weakness. And there's nothing weak about a defense alliance between Russia, China, and Iran. And if they can pull Turkey and India into it, it's even less weak. So that tells the world, okay, look, there's something here now, just like the Soviet Union used to be, that can stand against the Americans. And so the Americans will have to pull their horns in. They'll have to stop all of their crazed aggression everywhere. So the whole chance for life on Earth goes up multiple times if there's a defensive alliance formed against American-Israeli aggression. If that's not formed, it's going to continue. If Trump's capable of killing the second highest ranking government official in Iran in a foreign country on a diplomatic mission, he can kill anybody. He could try to kill Putin. You see, people get carried away with their success at doing crazy things. I mean, look at Israel. This is the whole history of Israel for 60 years. They've gotten away with everything, and it gets more and more and more reckless.
Emboldened, yeah. Not so much as a sanction against Israel. Not so much as a sanction.
Yeah.
In fact, what you see in countries now, particularly in this country, and I know it's happening in the US, is they're actually trying to criminalize now the people taking measures against Israel. So when people don't want to buy Israeli products, you know, you'll remember the anti-apartheid movement, Paul, when people were standing in solidarity with black South Africans. You know, we boycotted South Africa. But any suggestion that you boycott Israel now could lose you your job in this country. It's very serious.
No, here too.
Yeah.
We have 26 states where you're not allowed to participate in an Israel boycott. And they're trying to get it into a federal law. It's already law in 26 of the 50 states. So, and they're also trying to criminalize any criticism of Israel. If you criticize Israel, it's considered to be a hate crime. The only reason you're doing it is because you hate Jews.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it destroyed Jeremy Corbyn here. It ultimately destroyed the, I think ultimately Corbyn's ridiculous position on the European Union was ultimately his downfall. But he was torn apart by the press in this country over allegations of anti-Semitism, when really all that Corbyn ever did during his backbench days was criticise what Israel was doing in Gaza. We're seeing it here. I've had national media press coverage here criticising me for interviewing people like you, Paul Craig Roberts, would you believe? In the national press here. I could show you the articles. These are terrifying times when people can be fired or sent into exile, even if it's only sent into internet exile, just because they criticise the policies of a foreign country. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes left. It is a brilliant article. I mean, you've asked the ultimate question. You've posed the ultimate question. Why hasn't there been an alliance in the last 50, 60, 70 years to stand up to neocon Zionist or Israeli-American imperialism? Why? That's the $65,000 question, isn't it? Why has nobody stood up to it? And ultimately, it's because most of our leaders are controlled by these very same people we've been talking about. From the time they enter politics till the time they leave. I mean, Paul, you've had it with Cynthia McKinney in the United States. We have it here. Everybody is a member of the Conservative Friends of Israel or the Labour Friends of Israel. What about the Labour Friends of Ireland or the Conservative Friends of France? It's just Israel. Crazy.
Well, Israel's got a lot more money than Ireland.
Yeah, maybe.
The United States gives them billions every year, which they use to buy our elections. So we actually give them the money they use to buy our elections. And so it started with money, but now it's this notion that the Holocaust, anti-Semite, they are criminalizing the very concept of criticizing Israel, because they're saying that the only reason that anyone would criticize Israel, which never does anything wrong, is that they hate Jews and they want to do bad things to Jews. And so they're playing off the whole notion of hate speech, hate crimes. This was a creation of identity politics.
Yeah. You know,
the feminists use it, the blacks use it, immigrants use it, homosexuals use it. Everybody uses this to shield themselves and from any kind of criticism. So the Israelis are the masters at that. So from the money and now from creating the notion that you can't criticize Israel because it's an indication you hate Jews and want to do them harm. So that then is another reason where you just can't say anything about Israel. So I think Putin thinks he can handle this behind the scenes. Like I said, already the Russian foreign defense minister's meeting with everybody and they're getting it all under control. But he can't handle it behind the scenes unless he tells Israel, don't you dare do anything, or I'll nuke you. But he won't do that. And so Israel still is able to pull the trigger and pull the trigger again. And that, as I explained, will force Trump. Force Trump's hands because he's already blustered about all the things he'll do if Iran retaliates. So that's why it's serious. And everybody's so scared of Israel, nobody would say this publicly. I mean, if Trump stood up and said, okay, I'm pulling back and I'm not going to fall for anything that you Israelis pull. If he said this publicly, or if Putin said it publicly, if anybody with a position of power said it publicly, it would stop the Israelis from doing it, but everybody's afraid to say anything about Israel.
Or they're bought and paid for. Paul, do us a favor. Come back again real soon. You know you're welcome back anytime. Folks,
okay.
I love having you on. Paul, I want to mention paulcraigroberts.org. That's where you'll find Paul's writing. If you can send a couple of books to Paul's website when you can, do, because independent journalists are, well, they're like hen's teeth. In 2020. We've only been a few days into the new year. And Paul's writing is shot through with brilliance. It's terrifically well briefed. He's got his sources. And he's asking questions that nobody else is asking about these issues. PaulCraigRoberts.org. You know you're welcome back anytime. Thanks for the analysis today, Paul. I think I heard the cat whinge or meow a couple of minutes ago, so you might have a bit of animal duties to tend to there, my friend.
Yes.
Love having you on. Cheers, Paul. Speak soon.
All the best.
Yeah, absolutely. God bless. Paul Craig Roberts live on the Richie Allen Radio Show for Monday, January the 6th, 2020. Great to have Paul back on talking about that. Right, we're going to head off to FSN to get the latest headlines. Are we? I think we might very well be. When I come back, I'll read some of your tweets. Jason Burmes will join the radio programme real soon. This is the first Richie Allen Radio Show of 2020. Yes, we had Sunday View yesterday. Yes, the newspaper review show was on YouTube this morning and it will be again tomorrow at 9:30. But this is the first radio show proper. So Jason Burmes will join me in a couple of minutes' time. So after we get the headlines, it's right back to you and to your tweets, all right? Thanks for your tweets, by the way. And do keep them coming in. FSN, I'm sure it's Ollie Barrett.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Iran's supreme leaders led prayers as vast crowds packed the streets of Tehran for the funeral of military commander Qasem Soleimani. Police in Uganda have arrested the musician and opposition politician Bobby Wine. Officials in Australia say wildfires will take off again, even in areas that have now seen rainfall and lower temperatures. And the Congolese army says members of the ADF rebel group have killed 60 soldiers in the eastern DRC since October.
Thanks very much, Ollie Barrett. Yes, it's coming up for 2 minutes past six. Your Richie Allen Show, live in Salford in Greater Manchester. There's nothing like it in Salford in Greater Manchester, anyway. So do keep the tweets coming in. Hi to Steve James. How you doing, Steve? I will never enter in print or verbally the terms political Zionist, Zionism or Zio in the same sentence as Jew, Jews or Judaism. Not because I self-censor, because the two things are country miles apart, says Steve. Hi to the occult priestess who's listening and who is a fan and a follower of Jason Burmes. Thanks, Priestess. Nice to know you're with us this afternoon. Hi to Busy Bass Ninja. Patricia in Switzerland. Friend of ours. How you doing, Patricia? Great friend of ours. For what it's worth, Richie, I totally agree with Paul. The US has abused its power in the world, marching into countries only to take over that country's natural resources. Maybe it takes someone like Putin to bring the US to its knees and back to reality, says Patricia. Thanks, Patricia. Hi to Mwinga. Happy New Year to you, my friend. This will be the last day, by the way, of Happy New Year's. No more of it tomorrow. Hi to Liz Jones. How you doing, Liz? Thanks for tuning in. Hi to Sarosh. How you doing, Sarosh? Good to be with you. To Faisal. How you, Faisal? Mark Wilde as well. Do keep those tweets coming in and chat amongst yourselves as well. Right then, I think it's time for a tune. We've not had any music thus far in the programme. Here's some Iggy Pop. After Iggy Pop, it's off to Jason Burmes.
I'm a real wild one.
Wild. Right, that's Iggy Pop, yes. I sometimes get caught doing other things, you know. I had the music on there, and I was looking at an article while I was doing that. Welcome back to the programme. It's exactly 7 minutes past the hour of the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester. It's freezing here. It's freezing cold. It's wet. It's miserable. It's Manchester. I can't wait to speak with my next guest. Delighted he's coming back on the show. He was on with us last year for the first time. I'm thrilled he's back. I've known him without knowing him for many years because of his brilliant films. When we did the newspaper review show this morning, we talked on YouTube about the Daily Mail story today about the release of the graphic autopsy photographs from, well, the Jeffrey Epstein autopsy. And they are pretty grim and gruesome photographs, aren't they? And we're going to kick off with that. Let me introduce my guest. You know him very well. His YouTube channel is absolutely brilliant. Check it out. It's youtube.com/InfoWarrior. Again, I know that many of our listeners are well aware of who he is. YouTube.com/InfoWarrior. He's made films like Invisible Empire, Fabled Enemies, and the life-changing Loose Change. Top man. And on InfoWarrior on YouTube, he deals with terrifically important subjects, again, in a way that you don't get it dealt with on MSM mainstream media. Let's welcome back to the programme and say Happy New Year to the one and only Jason Burmes. Happy New Year, my friend. How are you?
Well, Happy New Year to you, my friend, and thank you for that very kind introduction.
It's the truth. It's brilliant. I won't go over old ground, but when we spoke last year, I mean, I was in proper fan mode talking about Loose Change and the difference that made to my life. But anyway, you're a lot more than that, and a lot more has happened since then. Hey, listen, I didn't get to watch. You nearly caught me out there. As I was doing my bits and pieces today, I was on your channel, and I saw the link to the video about the Epstein autopsy photographs. I'm going to watch it later on. I haven't had a chance to watch it, which I would ordinarily do thus far, but I'm going to put a link to it on Twitter now. Jason has done a kind of an examination of this story in the last 24 hours about the Epstein autopsy photographs. They're a bit grim, aren't they? They're pretty
well, they're out, number one. And I think that this is a reason that we still need the mainstream media. Let's not get it twisted. Obviously, they are liars on a scale we can never imagine. But once stories break like this, or during stories breaking, we often need sources to get in there that have resources that we don't, that can get these photographs of inside of his cell, of his dead body. And I'll say this, you know, it makes it even more less likely that supposedly Epstein was extracted. Now, we don't just have the New York Post photographs, but they go in line with this. You know, I go over it. His face is kind of purple. And when you look at the neck wound, number one, it's pretty apparent he must have been bleeding. That doesn't look like just bruising. And number two, it's on a lower part of his neck where if you would have thought it would be hanging, obviously it would be on an upper portion of his neck as well. I mean, there were a ton of anomalies. It's a 14-minute, 60-minute piece. They actually have a bonus piece, which I recommend as well on their website. But it shoots darts in the official story, and it shoots darts into the idea that Bill Barr, our attorney general, and remember, the attorney general under George H.W. Bush as well, the architect of covering up the BCCI scandal, is also covering this up by saying that he's seen video of nobody going in and out of that hall, and it's obvious to him that Epstein killed himself.
Let's get back to videos in a minute, because when you look at the photographs, how did Epstein get the time to make those nooses? And we'll come back to that in a second. I like what you said about this extraction theory. It annoyed me early on that certain independent media content creators were determining that Jeffrey Epstein had been spirited away to Israel. It didn't annoy me. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. But they were doing it just to bash Israel for the sake of it, number one. And number two, they weren't offering any hard evidence to support it. And what you're saying is very good, Jason. Here are the photographs. He wasn't extracted. The guy is stone dead. End of story.
Well, if he was extracted, we're talking about now a multitude of people that were in on it. Let's look at the interesting information, number one. We're talking about a man that was probably dead at about 4:30 in the morning. Now, there are two guards that are being charged with this. The one guard that actually found him still has not been interviewed by law enforcement. That should raise alarm bells. Number two, in the case of a dead body, which he was, if they didn't find him till 6:30, they say he was probably dead at 4:30. Obviously, he had been dead for a couple hours. You leave the body there because there is an investigation to be had. You don't rush him to the hospital. So those are some pretty big anomalies. And of course, the anomaly of the actual camera that should have been on his cell not working either. Again, CBS did a really good piece, and I even haven't really even scratched the surface of some of the other stuff they revealed, Richie.
Yeah, let's get into that in a second. I'm glad you mentioned the cameras. I saw a lovely meme on Twitter. It was a meme that showed General Qasem, I shouldn't say it, it's not lovely. It showed the hand of General Qasem Soleimani, and it talked about the speed of light that we got the photograph of the Iranian general, and yet we're still waiting for anything in terms of the hallway or the entrance to where Epstein was being kept. This story, I mean, you specialise in taking apart and deconstructing stories. I think this is the easiest thing you've ever had to do, is it?
It's the easiest. I don't know. It's been strenuous because, again, this is over a decade's worth of work. When we're talking about the suicide itself, is it easy? I'll say this. It's acknowledged more quickly than anything else I've ever covered.
Yeah.
I mean, literally the morning I woke up, and I woke up to several text messages, by the way, that Epstein had, quote unquote, committed suicide. So I would go that route. But easy, nothing's easy in this game, man. When we look at the ligature that they're now showing, that saying he choked himself. Well, there's a problem. There's no blood on it. There's no sign that it was actually used. When you look inside the cell, he had a breathing apparatus that had a long cord on it. Why wouldn't he have used the cord? And if he was on suicide watch, why was he with a ballpoint pen? There's so many questions. And one of the other things I really liked that CBS did is they confronted the lawyer of his first cellmate, which was Nicholas Tartaglione. This is an ex-cop who allegedly was caught up in some kind of a cocaine deal and allegedly murdered four people and buried them in an upstate New York farm. Now, Epstein's brother and Epstein's brother's, the forensic pathologist, Biden, have both stated that Epstein said he did not try to commit suicide the first time and he was attacked by Tartaglione. Now, CBS says that as a point of fact to his lawyer, who comes off as one of the, I'd say he's slightly slimier than the creepy porn lawyer that we had to, through that whole Trump thing, Avenatti. I mean, this guy's a creep. He says, nobody said that, and there's no evidence of it.
Well, you know what was said. Jason Burmes is our guest. InfoWarrior is the YouTube channel, youtube.com/InfoWarrior. Brilliant deconstruction. By the way, I wasn't in any way demeaning or diminishing your brilliant efforts. I was making the point I can't do it. But because, I mean, even for a novice like me, when it comes to, you know, forensically examining claims like the claim that Epstein killed himself, you look at it and you think it's absolutely dreadful. By the way, it's the only prediction I ever got right. A couple of months before he did allegedly kill himself, I mentioned to a British journalist called Tony Gosling that I wouldn't be at all surprised if Epstein wasn't found hung in his cell. It's completely untenable, Jason, isn't it, that he would have been left alone for so long. This is the most high-profile prisoner when he was alive in the United States. Nobody wanted that on their resume. You were the, excuse my French, you were the asshole who fell asleep on your watch and left something happen to Epstein. I mean, Jason, if it was me and you, we'd be taking speed to stay awake, wouldn't we? To make sure that nothing happens to this guy on our watch.
Well, let's be honest. If it was anybody that wasn't connected to all these powerful people, that wasn't an intelligence asset, there would have been an actual security force around him at all time and cameras all times. Listen, this suicide is the first one in 14 years in MCC. That was also revealed in the CBS piece. In fact, the entire jurisdiction only had one suicide other than Epstein's this year. That should scream corruption. And by no means I think you were demeaning me. I was just pointing out that there are still so many obstacles out there.
Yeah.
You know, for instance, people that are so thinking that Trump is going to take down the deep state and he's going to save us all and all this nonsense. Bill Barr is the architect of the BCCI cover-up, as I covered in a video earlier this week, which covered up the drug running, the money of Iran-Contra, the Bin Laden network, and the connections to the CIA, George H.W. Bush, his kid Neil, and others. This guy is as deep state as it gets. He started his career at Columbia with the CIA for 4 years while he got his law degree. We cannot trust him. And now that he is saying that it was definitely a suicide, you know, the New York Post was reporting before his suicide that Barr had visited that prison. And I think that's a distinct possibility. I mean, Barr is not somebody to be trusted. This administration is not to be trusted. And people have to get beyond this left-right paradigm and this idea that superheroes reside on message boards and indictments and arrests are coming, Richie.
Jason, we'll come back to the indictments and the arrests. Is there a connection to be made between the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and Jeffrey Epstein in terms of... You know, I was speaking to Dr. Paul Craig Roberts before you came on, and he agreed with me that the United States had nothing to gain by murdering Soleimani. I believe that Max Blumenthal has done a video on this. I know you've got your opinions. If Epstein was connected to Mossad, it's not unreasonable for me to think that Epstein may in the past have gleaned or saved or gathered some compromising information on Donald Trump. And then Trump, you know, you have what happened last Friday, the general is murdered. And I think, you know, it's like one of those old dot connecting things. Is there a link? What do you think?
You know, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
And this is why, you know, I actually just before coming on this broadcast, I just did a 50-minute, almost hour AMA with my audience on this certain conflict. And I'd say, number one, this has already been in the works for over a decade. You know, we have Wesley Clark talking about it. We have them being as that original part of the axes of evil. Now, obviously, we had it heat up over the summer with the limpet mine attacks and then the drone attacks against oil fields. Now, a lot of people disregarded the fact that Mike Pompeo was the guest speaker at Bilderberg at a castle dinner this year. And you already had Kush, Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, there. There has been no administration that has been more openly cozy with Israel, from giving them the Golan Heights to militarily backing them on everything. Now, you already see this building up. I just posted I showed a story from the 27th where Netanyahu and Trump had already allegedly signed a secret pact to go into Iran and kind of divvy it up responsibility-wise. This is at the same time that China comes in with Russia to do naval drills with Iran, which the United States was invited on but didn't want to partake. Now, on the 27th, we also get the fourth rung of OPCW leaks. These are the leaks from the chemical weapon proliferation front that was sent there by the UN to see if the Duma attacks happened in 2018. Well, all the low-level people all said it didn't happen. If you look at the evidence now that's been leaked, they tried to say there was no evidence of a chemical attack.
That's right.
That's not what we were told. The complete report was flipped on its head. These people tried to blow the whistle the right way, and no, they had to go through WikiLeaks, which they're trying to present as a Russian asset to get these things out. Now, all this happens, and suddenly one contractor dies, and it's okay to bomb not only Iraq, this is important, but Syria, to keep that front going. Now, for those that don't know, Soleimani has been the head of the Al-Quds force and really, you know, their Colin Powell in Iran. I'd say he'd even supersede that there, since he's on the ground in these forces and has actually had to fight ISIS where?
That's right.
In Lebanon, Iraq, the Kurdistan border, all these places, and Syria. And he's the main guy who's done this. In fact, they wouldn't just let him in, Richie. They have to let him in. Why? Because of Russian intervention. When they finally came in and said, listen, we're going to get rid of ISIS, obviously Iran is their ally and certain deals have to be made. So I really think that, you know, these people that have been with him forever, Trump's not, you know, I'm sure Trump had almost never heard of this guy's name before. They talk about the contractor. All of a sudden, after these drone strikes, you have people rightfully upset that their brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, friends, and family have been killed by U.S. drones. They take over the embassy, and Soleimani was actually sent there not to, you know, ride a military mission, but to mediate between the people that had taken it over, Iran and Iraq. So to strike him and kill him is an act of war to me. I think that right now they're looking at an escalation. I don't think anything like the impeachment or any of that, that's all a distraction. That's nothing. The permanent state has wanted this forever, Richie. And I think that they're using this as a time to kind of to strike, you know, whether that's because they just found $53 billion or a billion barrels of oil in a new region and they don't want Iran to have that and possibly cut the market. Now they're trying to act faster. You never really know behind the scenes. But I really don't see a connection.
No, the payoffs are multifaceted. No, you make a great point. The Trump administration hasn't begun moves in earnest against Iran. Mentioning Wesley Clark is very important. You're absolutely right. It's been, if we want to use the term deep state, it's been a plan for many, many, many years. I would just put forward this last argument about Epstein, and you can have the final word on that. Is that I believe that guys like Trump, whatever people think of Trump, and I don't have any time for him or for the things he's done in his past or the sort of character that he is, but I do believe, going on things that he said when he's been a guest on talk shows over the years, when he wasn't a politician, when he was just a very famous businessman, I do believe that he would have been inclined, as most, I suppose, kind of liberal type guys, even though he's always described himself as a conservative, I think he's more of a liberal, that he would have been against American interventionism. I think that would have been a genuine belief of Trump's going back in the day. I mean, he was against the Iraq war in 2003. He was famously against it. I just think that, and again, I could be wrong, it's just an opinion, that's all, that these guys, to ascend to the Oval Office, they've got to be compromised at some stage along the way. They're never going to get there. You're quite right. He's not the instigator of plans against Iran. No, you're absolutely right to make that point. But I wonder, does he get to be in that position? And does he order the pulling of that trigger on Friday last? Because there are videos and, you know, photographs. But maybe I'm wrong. That's all I was suggesting.
Well, let me say this, Richie, because this was always my thing. You know, I openly voted for Trump. And I said I was going to, but I always said it with a caveat. I said, my biggest fear is that they're going to be able to pull some kind of a false flag event. Doom is a great idea, right?
Yeah.
Especially because Trump had twice said in the month before that it was time to get out of Syria.
That's right.
Okay. And then all of a sudden you have that attack in Douma and his daughter's crying about it. And all of a sudden we have missiles going into that country. That's a bad thing. And I do think the guy thought he was going to come in with a superhero cape. And the other thing is that he is a very smart guy. But when you look at this impeachment, and we all know it's not going to go through, can you imagine how much time that occupies, not only, you know, with him dealing with lawyers and what he needs to do there, but in his head? And I think that's part of the, you know, distraction of Trump to kind of manipulate him. At the same time, like I've said, John Bolton is not a good guy. He put him in there. Gina Haspel is not a good person. Mike Pompeo, not a good person. So he never surrounded himself with like the Rand Pauls or the Ron Pauls even in his administration that made me comfortable thinking that he was going to go through with it. I think that, again, he thought he was going to go in there and be Superman. I don't know that they're compromising him on any kind of like Epstein blackmail. Why? Because I think they would have pulled that trigger in some way, shape, or form. They've tried to get him on every business deal they could. And when you look at it, we all know that the Russiagate thing was really an attempt to get him in a perjury trap, much like Flynn, much like Manafort, where once they got him in that seat, they could ask him anything they knew he would lie about that they thought that they couldn't really prosecute him on at the time, and then go for it. So I think it's a really multifaceted issue. And, you know, at the same time, Richie, we got to acknowledge that guys that push Trump, you know, career politician types, career insiders like Roger Stone, are not good people. Did he deserve to get railroaded in the manner he did? No, lying to Congress should not be a thing. Congress lies to us, smiles about it on a daily basis, and it costs the lives of tens of thousands of us and really tens of millions of people overseas with a little darker color skin. And I don't appreciate it.
Yeah, it's good stuff, Jason.
Roger Stone is also the architect of modern day lobbying. And you know how I feel about that, Richie. It's the first thing that we would have to cut off to try to get our constitutional republic back in this country.
Jason Vermes is our guest. It's youtube.com/InfoWarrior. Check it out if you haven't before. We've got Jason another 20, 25 minutes, loads to get through, and a number of questions have come in on the same topic. It's about Epstein, and it's about videos confiscated or seized from Epstein's property. We'll come back to that in a second. The video Jason is talking about, the one he made last night about the Epstein autopsy and the photographs in the cell, check it out at youtube.com/InfoWarrior. What did you make of the UK comedian Ricky Gervais and the comments he made last night at the Golden Globes? Nothing to write home about there, just a little bit of rib tickling. Or was there something else going on there when he said to them, he's your friend and you'll have to fly yourselves home now? That's a bit close to the bone, that.
I'll tell you what, Richie, I love doing this show because that's actually how I opened the video before we went to the Epstein autopsy photos. Not only for a little laugh, but because he said, oh, I get it, he was all your friends. And you can visibly see some of the people in the audience pretty upset that he had said that. And then, like you said, he added that extra jab about the plane.
Yeah.
So props to Ricky Gervais, man. I don't have to agree with the guy on everything. I'll be honest. You know, I've only seen a little bit of his stuff. You know, I saw him in the Muppet movie because I watched it with my my nieces or whatever. But good for him. I don't have to agree with everything he says. I actually watched his whole 7.5 minute ribbing, and all of it was pretty decent. And that was the icing on the cake for me.
Yeah, and even the comment about Prince Andrew. It's fantastic. He said something about...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and he dug a little Leo DiCaprio on that as well. So kudos to him. I loved it.
Yeah, good stuff. Right. A number of people have asked me about... I want to come back in a minute to your belief, and I really hope you're right. And to be fair to you, you've got insight here, and you've been right many times. I hope you're right about indictments and arrests in terms of, you know, the murder. You could say the assassination of Epstein because of his connections. Before we go to that, what happened to the lorry loads, the truck loads of evidence taken from Epstein properties, including videos and stuff? Where the hell is it, Jason? And who's examining it?
Well, that's a great question. And I had done a video earlier this week, and we're going to tie it all together, on Ghislaine Maxwell and the stories out there that she was indeed connected to intelligence, was being protected by her rich friends and the intelligence community, and doesn't think that she'll be brought to justice. Because we have had the reports early as November that four people were ready to be arrested by the FBI. Now, before that, I was kind of referring to, you know, these message boards that say hundreds of indictments or the deep state's going down. But we still do have good people within the FBI, or Epstein wouldn't have gotten arrested in the first place, and they wouldn't have flipped three of his employees, and we wouldn't have had a judge release 2,000 pages. Yeah. And we hope on 10 days from now, another 10,000 pages will be released, although I'm not really confident, because guess what? The Bill Barr FBI cover-up crew is in full effect. And what do I mean? Well, in that safe, what did they publicly find? Well, they found a passport with a Saudi Arabian address and an alias for Epstein that they did not disclose which country it came from. Whitney Webb has done some really good work on that. I agree. She's got a beat on it, and it's more than likely from where she thinks it comes from. Go check out her stuff. But the other thing is, they said they found cash and jewelry. All three of those things were listed by Maria Farmer as being in his safe. And what else? Actual physical tapes. Now, Maria Farmer is the first person to report Epstein, not from Palm Beach in the late 2000s. No, in 1996, when she went to the NYPD and the FBI and said she had been held against her will at Les Wexner's mansion after being sexually assaulted by Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein. Now, at this time, she was working for him and overage. She was his door girl at the New York mansion. And she said Epstein had actually told her that. Now, her younger sister, who was underage at the time, also got sexually attacked by Epstein. She happened to jump into my comments section on that video of Ghislaine Maxwell this week, saying she would, you know, watch, I believe it's 3 days from now, there's going to be a piece with Maria Farmer in there. And she thinks Les Wexner is the head of that snake. She thinks he is actually the boss man. And that's the vibe she got working for Epstein. So I'm really interested to see, you know, what this piece has to offer and whether I can actually get Maria Farmer on my show, because she made several comments that were jarring. Obviously, when I realized it was her, I tried to contact her. But, you know, the good people at YouTube decided to take away the private message feature. So I have no way to get in touch with her.
Is that right? Yeah, we touched on this when you were kind enough to speak with me just before Christmas. So they're still doing that then, making it difficult for people to communicate under the videos because, yeah, of course, that's what they do. It's just what they do. And what are we going to do about it? Jason Burmes is our guest. I'd love to think that, I mean, I was really heartened prior to the Christmas period with the conduct of the UK media, particularly the Mail. It won't let Prince Andrew go, the Daily Mail. It's after him. And that's a good thing, you know, talking about his tax business, you know, dealings, dodgy dealings he's been doing around the world, tax shelters, all this sort of stuff. They're really going after him. And I just wonder now, I know it's only 6 days into the new year. There hasn't been very much in the press in the last few days. And then I saw this story in the Mail today, and that took me to you, even though we'd agreed to speak a couple of days ago. And I just wonder, are you concerned, Jason, that brilliant that CBS have done what they've done, but that this might just fizzle away in the coming weeks?
I mean, I've been concerned since day one. I'm not going to let this story go, Richie. That's the bottom line. And there are other people like myself that refuse to let this story go. And that's a good thing. We can't let this story go because Epstein is really, although a very intricate part, a very small part because of how many decades his power and abuse spanned and how many names, whether they be presidents or princes, Richie, he was involved with. You know, Les Wexner is not just the limited guy. He's not just a fashion guy. I encourage people to go read the leaked Wexner report that came out after the fall of Saddam that was leaked out there that showed that Les Wexner and his group are really about Israeli policy in the Middle East and full spectrum dominance there with the aid of the U.S. military industrial complex. That's why I always talk about this Anglo-American Israeli-Saudi alliance in that region. They want to dominate the entire region, Richie, and they will do anything they can, my friend. And if that means blackmail, if that means arms dealing, a.k.a. Iran-Contra, Adnan Khashoggi, remember, Vicky Ward said Adnan Khashoggi had a connection to Epstein. That would make sense. You know, Adnan Khashoggi, what was he? A Saudi Arabian billionaire facilitating the arms trade. Oh, wait a minute. Didn't that passport have a Saudi Arabian alias and address and stamps on it for Epstein? That's a pretty big coinkydink. I wonder what the dates are and why we don't know those dates yet, Rich. Yeah. I mean, come on.
And we have, well, we heard over the weekend, didn't we, that I know you touched on this, but I want to come back to it. Maxwell has apparently surrounded herself with ex-Navy SEAL guys. She must be convinced. Well, you would imagine that she believes that she's marked for death, right?
Let's talk about this right now. Because like you said, the Daily Mail has done some great work. And I want to tell people this. They were one of the people that originally put Virginia Giuffre Roberts' story out there.
That's right.
Way back in 2010. And they're actually, some of those documents, those news stories, were part of the 2,000-page data dump. Now, I think we have to be very careful with all the different things that are coming out about this case, especially with Ghislaine Maxwell. Why? Well, initially, when she was in Boston, days later, we get pictures of her in L.A.
That
obviously have photoshopping outside of an In-N-Out. Then we have that viral internet story that was completely fake that people tried to push about her writing an Amazon review about the spy book that she was clearly holding. She's trying to put out her own disinfo, and the people that are working with her, aka those that want to not be exposed, are also working with her. Now, on the flip side of that, remember, the media was trying to push that she was going to come out and do a tell-all interview. Well, none of that was true. What was that? That was Prince Andrew and his PR crew putting out media disinfo to try to pressure her into doing that, as the stories came out that he was trying to get her to do an interview. Now, we also have the stories out there that are saying they have a friend source, and she was relieved that Epstein was killed or died because she doesn't want to be flipped on. I think that the Navy SEAL story could either be complete disinformation or just partially true, in the sense that it's very possible that she's, hiring Blackwater type, Academy type, private military group bodyguards, and some of them may be ex-Navy SEALs. But, you know, I do believe that the reports are true, that she is being protected from country to country. Now, obviously, they put out the United Kingdom and Israel as those countries. Remember, this is a possible and more than likely an active intelligence asset. They love disinformation, Richie. So I'm always careful, man. I report on these things, but I always report on them with a caveat. Obviously, she's being protected in some manner. Whether the locations we've been given and the manner she's being protected are accurate, I think we got to remain skeptical.
Yeah, it's a good report, but don't endorse. That's very good. Mm-hmm. Don't claim it to be fact. Yeah, because before this whole, Navy SEAL story, stories ran here that she was in talks with some of the big networks in the US to do it all. And that seems to be absolute bull spit as well, doesn't it? And to be honest with you, not that I know anything about this sort of espionage or intrigue, but if I was advising her, I would probably say to her, at this stage, there's no harm in doing, an interview with somebody, one of the heavyweight CNN anchors or somebody like that, and just do what Andrew did, but do it better than Andrew did it, because nobody could do it worse than Andrew did it. I'd be saying to her now, go on television and say, listen, some of these girls, whatever, deny. But maybe that would be a foolish thing for her to do. I don't know.
I think it'd be extremely foolish. I mean, that Andrew was, apparently there was a time period when not only did Prince Andrew not party, but he couldn't physically sweat. I watched that whole thing. When those things happen, I'm one of those guys that I won't do a report until I watch the entire, video.
Of course, yeah.
And I watched that thing and marked down so many obvious lies that, right on the spot, you could tell. I was like, why would he agree to do this? But then again, I don't live overseas and in that culture, and I don't know.
No, but let me briefly do what I don't do. I'm going to interrupt you there, and I want to hear your thoughts on this. Listen, you're right. It was I've never seen anything as dreadful as that. I watched it live as it went out. What you said there about the sweating, I have this condition where I don't sweat. It's laughable stuff. What I can't understand is, and people are putting it down to the arrogance of the aristocratic class or whatever, I'm not buying this. It would have been very, very easy for him to do the interview with Emily Maitlis from Newsnight, which he did, and sit there and say, listen, I'm profoundly horrified by these things that are being said. I'm horrified. I'm sorry for these girls. It's a terrible thing, and I'm sorry for their families, but I don't know anything about this. I knew or know Maxwell, and I knew Jeffrey. We did some stuff together, and I'm sorry that these things are being said, but I didn't do it. I swear to God and Sonny Jesus, but I'm sorry for these girls, and I hope they get all the help they need. Jesus Christ, Jason, it's easy to do that. It's actually more difficult to do what he did. Go on.
Here's the caveat. We only really know about Virginia Giuffre Roberts other than Epstein because she's publicly named people and gave those stories to the Daily Mail initially and other news outlets that didn't touch it, right?
Yeah.
There are 30-plus women in Florida alone that we know about. We have more people coming forward. And although they haven't publicly named other people, they are named in these court documents. And if we get a 10,000-page dump on January 16th, there could be a lot of other names that have, Virginia Giuffre Roberts couldn't have been with just everybody that is being named in these cases. So, I think it's up for debate where this is going. With him saying that, what if 15 other women name him? What if he's named by 15 other women, Richie? Then that's going to go, out the window.
Very salient point. And it might look that it shoots down my theory, but I'm going to raise you this, right? I think you might be right. There might be other girls there. Well, we know there's at least one girl who's claimed against Andrew. Well, in that case, then, he just wouldn't do the interview. This is what I can't figure out. I can't figure this out.
I mean, sibling rivalry is a real thing, even with, Charles and Philip, when you think about it, and even his sons. So I don't know. Maybe Charles, there was a lot of reports Charles was pissed that this had gone, so public with Andrew. I can't tell you. Maybe, his PR people, believe me, I was as shocked as you were, but I was shocked they arrested Epstein in the first place. Maybe it's just one of life's quirks, man. Maybe every once in a while we get a win and we get to see these demons for what they are up close because of a human mistake. Because at the end of the day, Richie, I believe we are all human and we are all fallible. And I think that, really comes into play when you look at Epstein's cell and how many things don't make sense with their theory. You would think that somebody that could, get this murder done, I'm going to call it a murder of Epstein, that they would, make the crime scene look realistic, that there wouldn't be all these anomalies that were easily pointed out by CBS, but yet it happened. So, I would just point to, human fallibility. We all make mistakes. Nobody's perfect.
Or we're in a dream within a dream. No.
There is a simulation of the simulation.
Well, do you know what? The reason I say that, I'm not going to go all David Icke. I'm saying that not because I think we are in a dream within a dream, but because maybe at some stage we have to consider the possibility, even though we don't have any evidence to back it up, that somebody made it look as bad as they did deliberately.
That's also a possibility, man. Or somebody got rushed out. Without any tapes of the cell, it's going to be one of those mysteries that I fear are never going to be unraveled. And it's unfortunate because we've had these throughout our natural lifetime and beyond that, Richie.
Sorry to interrupt you. I have to say this. I've got to say this. It's hilarious me talking to you because you've been dealing your entire adult life with tapes going missing and tapes being erased. And I don't say that for a laugh. I'm laughing because I'm incredulous. Your work on September the 11th is stellar. I mean, Christ, the amount of tapes that the machines didn't work, the video cameras didn't work. We could talk about the assassination of Princess Diana, whole street loads of CCTV cameras just suddenly decide not to work. The modus operandi is sickeningly simple every time, isn't it? We're back to this.
Lost the OKC tapes. We go on and on. What they didn't lose in the OKC tapes were all those news coverage of the actual bomb trucks going in and taking out bombs 3, 4, and 5. And, I forget what his name, Chuck Keating, I believe it was. I want to say it was Chuck Keating. I think it was the governor going on live television talking about that, talking about the bomb trucks getting the internal bombs out there. But, the CCTV footage of the explosion actually happening, that disappears. So, I don't want to get into all these other things, but you're absolutely 100% right. And once again, I think that Trump came in there swinging his Johnson, thinking he was going to be Superman. He was telling us that we were going to get the JFK information. And listen, when he twice failed on that, I warned everybody. I said, look, if he can't reveal the deep state from 50 plus years ago, he's not revealing the deep state and taking him down now. And unfortunately, Richie, he's really just become another tool of that media, military, industrial complex apparatus, whether he realizes it or not.
Jason, just before we go today, folks, if you want to see the forensic examination of the Epstein cell photographs of the body and the nooses, go to youtube.com/InfoWarrior. And we're talking to a real independent content creator today, real independent journalism. I said to Paul Craig Roberts earlier on, you're like hen's teeth, real independent writers and filmmakers, sadly. But that's the way it is. We got to make do with what we have. So I'll be looking forward to watching this video when we finish up in a couple of minutes' time. Just a quick, I know I shouldn't say that, a quick word on what happened last Friday. Paul Craig Roberts is convinced that the Israeli government's influence over Trump led to the assassination of Soleimani. We touched on it briefly. Gerald Celente, the great trends forecaster, good guy Gerald, reckons we're seeing the opening salvos of what might become a global conflict. What do you think?
You know, that's, again, what I spent like an hour on going, you know, the ifs and ands. Again, I'd say this. They've wanted this for a long time. This is not a small nation. This is 60 million plus people. They have a real military. Russia's not just going to roll over. This is a really bad, bad thing. As far as the assassination of Soleimani, again, when we know that prior to that, there were already secret pacts being signed between Trump and Netanyahu. And, you know, Trump just seems to go by everything they say. Remember, the story of the stingrays and the surveillance Israeli group that was found in Washington, D.C. was just shunned off by Trump and his administration. It was laughed off. You know, apparently he's just going to take Netanyahu's word for it. And remember, Israel is diverse. Netanyahu isn't Ehud Barak, but Ehud Barak isn't a good guy either. He's actually connected to Epstein very heavily, by the way. But Netanyahu seems to be more warlike, more willing to use his military. So to say that, you know, Israel wasn't involved in that call, I would say is a misnomer. But to say they're absolutely involved in that call, I'm not sure yet. But obviously, again, that Anglo-American, Euro-Israeli alliance in that region for full spectrum dominance, get NATO all the way in there, get military bases in there. That's what they wanted for a long, long time, Richie. And I hope they don't get it. I hope we're not dumb enough to go to war. But with Iran putting an $80 million price tag on Trump's head, that's not chump change, okay? It really isn't. And you have real mercenaries out there. And what I really do fear is now they're naming, you know, Trump Plaza and all these other targets as viable targets. Listen, the possibility of a false flag of somebody that's real and allowed to do this, or a more manufactured one like in 93 with the World Trade Center bombing, where they took an Egyptian army officer, Ahmad Salam, had him make a bomb with the aid of the FBI and then give it to the terrorists and they set it off. That's a possibility too. There are a lot of possibilities that really scare me, Richie. I hope I'm wrong. I don't want to see this pop off. I think that we need to get out of Afghanistan, Syria, Libya, Iraq. We need to get out of the AFRICOM situation. I know we just had an incident in Kenya. Well, I'm sick of us being all over the world acting like the policemen when really we're just interested in dominating the regions and dominating the resources.
Jason, thanks for your time today. Folks, go to youtube.com/InfoWarrior. Follow Jason on Twitter. It's at Jason Bermas. And check out Jason is putting up films, videos, broadcasts on a daily basis. But do check out I'm going to watch it myself, the Epstein report by Jason today on the release of those photographs from the cell. Again, mate, Happy New Year to you. Thanks for your excellent work and for your humility and for being willing to listen to people who take a different point of view than you. There's not many of us left. I really appreciate it, Jason.
Thank you, sir, and anytime. And I want to thank you for being part of my 24 videos in 24 hours, which actually ended up being 26. You were a great guest, and I hope to have you on my show soon.
Yeah, it'll be a pleasure anytime. Thanks again, Jason. Enjoy the rest of the day. Brilliant work from Jason Bermas, live on the Richie Allen Radio Show, Monday, January 6, 2000. And I nearly said 19. I'm going to say it before the week is out. I'm going to say it before the week is out. It's 2020, of course. Yeah. It's 2020. Coming up for 10 minutes to the top of the hour. Right. Lots and lots of comments came in there. Memes and stuff and links. Thanks, Faisal. I'll retweet Faisal there. A link to Jason's YouTube channel. And it's at Jason Bermas on Twitter. I know I said that, but I'm saying it again. Follow him there on Twitter, Jason Bermas there. There's a few things I wanted to get into today. And it was a packed show today. And I don't think I have time, be Jesus. Have I time? I don't think so. Oh, do you know what I've done? What it was is I had about a 35-minute long monologue. And I said to myself, I said, save some of it till the end. Because you're not going to get through it all. Because I needed to get Paul Craig Roberts on really early. But there was an interview on GMB this morning with an Australian MP called Craig Kelly. And it was about the Australian fires. and the idea that the fires are basically a result of climate change. And this guy Craig Kelly was on. You can watch it on YouTube. It's on the GMB Good Morning Britain YouTube channel. And he got into a discussion with Piers, the absolute complete arsehole Morgan, and a woman called, is it Laura Tobin? I don't know, it might not be Laura Tobin. Might be. And she's the weather girl, but she's not a weather girl. She's a meteorologist. She's a qualified meteorologist. And he got into a bit of a discussion with her about the history of rainfall in Australia. And he kind of blew her out of water. Although, the way television works, they made it difficult for him to elaborate on what he was saying. But he made a point about there being a lot more rainfall in the last 10 years in Australia than there was in the 10 years before that. And she blurted out, well, that's because of extreme weather, which is rather foolish of her. But yeah, they were talking about the Australian bushfires and the notion that they are a result of anthropogenic... Is that how you say it? Climate change, man-made climate change, and he wasn't having it. And I wanted to analyse that interview because I did record some of it. But anyway, what are you going to do? I don't have it handy now. I've only got 6 or 7 minutes left before I'm going to wrap today anyway. Alrighty. Was on this morning. It's on YouTube. If you missed it, you didn't miss a lot, really. The newspaper review, it gets very old a couple of hours after it happens. Right, because you've read the newspapers by now. But it's on YouTube.com. I will continue to do that for the foreseeable future. Now, I'm not going to continue to do it forever. The newspaper reviews at 9:30 in the morning. And I'll get into why maybe another day. I'll do it for the foreseeable future. But ultimately, it's a lot of work. For not very much gain. And I don't mean monetary gain. I mean in terms of building on top of the audience we already have. That's what I mean. I thought it would be a way into maybe adding a different type of audience onto our already significant radio audience, but it's not happening. There's a bit of work in it. So we'll see. We'll see how things develop in the course of the next 12 months. We're coming up for 6 minutes to the top of the hour. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show. It is Monday, January the 6th, 2020. You should be taking down your Christmas decorations today, shouldn't you? If you haven't done it, get them down now. Back in a second.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Right, do me a favour and check out triggerwarning.tv as well, and the YouTube channel Trigger Warning, Graham Booth and Hayden Hewitt, for again an alternative take, a different take on the big news stories of the day. You'll hear a lot of different commentary, different opinions than you hear on this programme. Check them out. That's about it then. I'm going to love you and leave you today. Going to go out with some music from The Who in a second. Back tomorrow morning at 9:30 on YouTube with the newspaper review. And then I'm working on some very interesting guests for tomorrow, Tuesday's Richie Allen Radio Show, which is on at 5. It's a brand new year, so I'll tell you what you already know. Richie Allen Radio Show, Monday to Thursday at 5. Sunday View at 11. UK times, of course. At the moment, we're in Greenwich Mean Time. Yes, we are. And 9:30, Monday to Thursday, the newspaper review show, 9:30, Monday to Thursday. I want to thank my guests, Paul Craig Roberts. Thank you, Paul. PaulCraigRoberts.org and Jason Burmes, youtube.com/InfoWarrior. Jason is on YouTube. Paul isn't. The Paul Craig Roberts account on Twitter doesn't belong to him. He doesn't know who set it up. But Jason is on Twitter. It's at Jason Burmes is the Twitter handle there. I'm playing this for my friend Patricia in Zurich. Patricia, this is for you. It's The Who and Won't Get Fooled Again. Until tomorrow, it's bye from me. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Bye now.